Hi, everybody, and welcome everybody who's worshiping in the Woodside Room. We're really glad you've made that a choice. It really helps us in our gathering on these weekends. Also to those online, glad we can be together. And let me welcome everybody in the room as well. Would you take out your program notes? You can follow along as we continue our series, Goodbye Busy, Hello Life. We introduced it last week, borrowing from Richard Swenson, a definition of margin, that margin is that space between my load and my limits. Just in a review of last week, we called ourselves out to say, start paying attention to what your capacities are. What can you really handle? And what is the load that's pressing in on you? We also talked last week about a metaphor that busyness is like sinkholes, the cavity caused by water erosion, and that they're common, they're costly, and they're even deadly at times. Busyness is like that. It's common, and it's costly, and sometimes the erosion of joy is deadly to the experience of life that we long for. But I also reminded you that sometimes busy is what life is, that it's okay to be busy, and in fact, you can't make a living. You can't have 2 and 3-year-old children in your house without being busy. You can't serve and love the needs of others without giving of your life and your time and your energy. Busyness is part of life. Jesus was busy often, so we're not saying that you'll never be busy. You cannot completely avoid busyness, but we can avoid getting stuck in busyness. As we talked about, that shade between doable busy and destructive busy, and that's what we want to avoid. And so we find the call is to pay attention to how do we avoid getting stuck in that busy place so we don't act like hamsters. Anybody raise hamsters in their life? I had hamsters when I was in high school. For whatever reason, I liked them a lot. We were in Sioux Falls 2 weeks ago, we went to a home. Carrie was with me, and we were celebrating my mom's birthday. We did a little tour of all the homes I lived in my junior high and high school years in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And we went to this home where I had these three hamsters, Henry the First, Henry the Second, and Henrietta. And the house has been demolished, but it's an open space of land. And I said out loud to everybody in the car, I wonder if my hamsters are still buried there. Because when they died, I buried them in brute boxes. Do you remember those brute boxes? Incredible caskets. Those little brute boxes are wonderful. I buried them all there, and I was wondering if they were still there. What I think about with those hamsters there, I have no fond affection for them at all in my memory. But what I remember is that they love to get on their hamster wheel between midnight and 6 a.m. in the morning. If you've raised hamsters, that's when they do it. And it's nuts. They don't stop. It's crazy like this. Is this your life, by the way? Just take a look at this little video. That's a hamster wheel. This is what they do. Go for a little ride and slow down. Then they go for a bigger ride. If you continue watching the video, the hamster actually flies off the wheel. It gets back on again. Is that your life? Does it feel like it's just out of control that way, flying off in crazy, busy kinds of ways? Carrie was on Facebook the other day and shared with me something I really appreciated seeing, because I invited us last week, just invited you, start a journal. A digital journal, or get a hard copy journal, whether you're journaling or not in your life, just do it for the 7 weeks. And put as a header on top of your journal, Goodbye Busy, Hello Life. And I was delighted to see from Facebook that there was this exchange of invitations of people who started digital journals and hard copy journals, and they're really taking it seriously, and so am I. And I want to invite you to do the same thing. In my journal this last week, I put 2 questions that I feel I need to give better energy to. And I said last week, getting your lives out of busy stuckness, it requires time. You got to do some deep thinking, which we're going to do today as well. But one of the questions I put is, how many unexpecteds did I deal with today? So every day I ended, last week I defined unexpecteds, so things that come to you that you didn't see coming, they weren't part of your day schedule. How many expecteds came to me each day? I was surprised how many there were over the course of the week. Most of them came from email. And I've really never tuned in to how many unexpecteds start to take some of really the best time and energy sometimes of my life, because I just get into it and start moving through it. I said, I've got to manage this better. I need a better steward, that reality in my life. There needs to be greater efficiency. At the end of these 7 weeks, I want to see great improvement. So I put at the top of my journal these words to help me, four categories to help me deal with my emails in the weeks to come. They might be helpful to you too. Do it, dump it, delegate it, decide right now. Do it, dump it, delegate it, decide right now. Now, that may be the worst idea in the world. I'll see how it goes over these weeks ahead. But I need some help, and I need some categories to help me think intentionally about it. The second question I put is, why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I doing it? It's a motivation check. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Because I know there's no corrective measure to busyness in life without us asking that question. Today's message sharpens the question a little bit as well. Proverbs 4:23 says, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flows the springs of life. Now, I memorized that verse in a different version. I like it a little better, but it says, guard your heart with all diligence, for from it flows the wellspring of life. And the Hebrew word guard is a military term that says, put soldiers around your heart because you need them to protect your heart and the wellspring of life. When I think of a spring, I think of a bubbly little spring in a yard that's nurturing the earth and that which is around it, a fresh drink of water for the parched soul. And that's not the reality of busyness. It's more of a torrent of destruction that takes place when we hit that chapter. This week's message is called A View from the Bridge. It's a title that I actually changed from the original title because it became meaningful to me after last winter and spring. I have a question for you. Do you want to have the same winter and spring that we had last year? Okay, then I just want you to take 15 seconds, 10 seconds, and say to the person next to you, pray that God does not give us the same winter and spring as last year. I'm serious. Say that to each other right now. Pray that God doesn't give us. Yeah, see, we need this one. Because how many of you have even prayed about that right now? In light of last year, I'm on bended knee over this deal. Not reliving that one again. Oh, God, help us. Please, God, give us a long fall that feels like spring. Join me in praying this way. The collective prayers of God's people, they may be heard here. The reason I raise that is because the title, A View from the Bridge, actually came from an experience last spring when I went to the Chaska Bridge to lean over and look at the Minnesota River and the torrent of destruction and to look closely and to see what was in it, the trees, the debris, all the destruction that was happening in our surrounding region. Here's what I want to say. I want us to lean over the bridge of our soul and to take a look at what's rushing in the heart of our crazy, busy lives. And it takes intentionality to even make it to the bridge to lean over. And then to look closely and carefully into what's really rushing through this place of the heart that's created this destructive busyness that erodes the joy of my life. In your program, I actually stated what my message is today, that the primary cause of busyness is pride. Guard your heart from pride, which fuels the barrenness of busyness. But pride is not always easy to detect, and you know that. Pride blinds us to self-awareness, to God's voice and hearing it. It takes a spirit of humility to lean over the bridge of your soul and to look at what's rushing in your heart, to see the erosion that busyness causes and to see the actual cause of it. But humility is a word we don't use a lot today. It doesn't make a lot of press time, doesn't get a lot of air time. And in fact, we find there's no reality TV show for the humble. And it's usually stated or not stated as one of the core values of companies. We put all kinds of cool words together to say this is who we are. But when was the last time you saw a core statement of what the existence of a church or a company was that said we're humble? Doesn't get a lot of airtime, but humility is the essential character trait to a well-ordered life. Look at 1 Peter 5:5b and following. God opposes the proud, but shows favor to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. Oh, I want to anchor my words today in this powerful little text. In fact, we find the main point of this is be humble and don't be proud. Could leave it there, right? But pride, I believe, fuels some of this crazy busyness. And humility helps us to manage it properly. In fact, we find Peter gives four motivators. He gives us four incentives in terms of humility here. And I put them actually in your program because I wanted you to take them home and maybe sit on them a little bit. But the first part of 5B, we see the first motivator is God is opposed to the proud. I mean, what would be worse for us in life than to have an all-powerful God be opposed to us? Oh, there is a motivation to be humble. The second part of the verse, God gives favor. He gives grace to the humble. That's an incentive to live a life of humility. What could be better for us in life than to have a good God who treats us with his grace and his favor? How many of you want God's grace and favor just to be lavished on your life? Raise your hand. Oh, be bold in it. I mean, goodness, you're a wise people. We want goodness and grace, don't we? I think of verse 6 here, the third incentive is because God lifts up the humble with his mighty right hand. I'm going to put my own words in here. God lifts up the humble with his mighty right hand to deliver us from all the crazy busyness of our lives. He does. It's a promise when we come to him. In verse 7, a fourth incentive, God cares for the humble. Cast all your cares and anxieties on him because he cares for you. Love this text. It's so simple. It's so clear. Now, I've got to choose to abide in it and receive it and live in it. But it is so clear. And do you see the connection of humility with not being anxious? And we live in a time of heightened anxiety in our culture. Do all the research on it. Our kids, our parents, we're anxious driven today. Let me just reflect on this a little bit from this text. You've heard me say before that anxiety is a heightened sense of concern, a diminished sense of control. So the more concern you have, the less control you have over it. You've got this increasing anxiety in your life, right? And yet we find here that some of our worries and anxieties are probably in some form in the shape of pride. Because pride says that I'll deal with it myself. And without maybe even realizing it, you just leave God out of the equation of your journey and your life. I mean, and it says God opposes the proud. Well, who are the proud? They're the ones who are choosing to live for themselves and not include God in the journey, in the path. And then it says your ability to cast your cares and anxieties in his mighty right hand requires humility. This just stands out to me so powerfully because I have had friends in scripture memory groups. I love memorizing scripture. I encourage you to do the same thing, but they want to memorize the last part. And it says it so beautifully that cast all your cares and anxieties on him because he cares for you. Isn't that a nice verse? But we don't memorize the context. We just love the idea that God cares for us. But do you see what anxiety is tied to here? It says, humble yourself in the presence of the Lord, and with his mighty hand, he'll lift you up in due time. Cast all your cares and anxieties on him because he cares for you. Your capacity to cast your cares and anxieties upon him require humility. It's the only way it happens. So anxiety gets tied in some form to pride, and God opposes the proud, but humble yourself in the presence of the Lord with his mighty right hand, a promise. He'll lift you up. He'll lift you up. And I think about where some of you are. Some of you came this morning and you're thinking about your week and you're so anxiety driven already about the week. It's driving you crazy. You got a promise today. His mighty right hand will lift you up. Cast all your cares upon him because he cares for you. It's saying, let's be humble so that we can know his favor, so we can experience his mighty right hand lifting us up, so we can know that he cares for us. Feel it. Know that that advocacy is there no matter what we're going through. And if these words take root in us, they will influence the decisions we make and how we choose to live our life. So what is pride and how does it lead to the barrenness of busyness? And that's what I studied this past week. And pride has many faces. And if you thought coming to church this morning would be like going through a drive-thru and picking up your Egg McMuffin and flying off, you're going to be surprised today. I wrestled this week and looked at pride and saw so many faces to it. It was a bit overwhelming, in fact. I chose six of the faces of it. This is what I want to invite you to do. I know it's early in the morning. Some of you were up way too late last night, but I'm glad you came anyway. But would you think deeply with me today? I think the resolve to this requires deep thinking and understanding the power of pride in our lives. Humility is the opposite of each of these six biblical statements or observations about pride. I found 12 clear ones, but I cut them down to six for this morning's message. And I want you to follow along as we walk through each of them. But I put them in the form of an assessment. Since we're trying to move out of a busy life, saying goodbye to it, the destructive busyness, and to say hello to new biblical rhythms of life. So I put it in a statement that you could use as an assessment. You can either say true or false, that's me. Or you could just check the box to say these two boxes are part of my pride issue. And if you don't have any boxes checked at the end of it, you may have a pride issue. Just saying, not, I don't judge the heart. You have to go before the Lord with that, but here's the fuel. So I'm crazy busy, so why am I doing what I'm doing? Number one, I'm self-satisfied. Pride is being satisfied with yourself, with your situation in life, your circumstances. You're filled up with life, so much so you say, man, can't get any better than this, but without realizing it, perhaps have you left God out of the equation of your journey? You're satisfied in life. You don't need God. Hosea 13:4 says, but I have been the Lord your God ever since you came out of Egypt. I cared for you in the wilderness, in the land of burning heat. When I fed them, they were satisfied. When they were satisfied, they became proud. Then they forgot me. Isn't it so clear what happens to us here? When our life is good and when we have what we need to live, we get satisfied, potentially vulnerable, and we can become proud. And proud here means, in application, we forget God. That's what he says. But God is the giver of all that satisfies, right? God is the giver of all that satisfies. All that we have and all that we are has come from him. He is the source. He is the one who gives us the bread of life, the sustenance that we long for. And when we're satisfied, we get busy with life. And subconsciously sometimes, intentionally sometimes, we leave God out of the equation. We just don't feel the need for him right now because everything's going okay. And then in the time of need, oh, we're on bended knee. Oh, God, help me, help me, help me. But he's the giver. And every time, true or false, so is your daily need satisfied so that you forget God? Is that you? You forget to thank him or to lean into him or to allow the busyness of your life just to exclude him? That's pride. And closely related to this is number two, I'm self-sufficient and self-reliant. In other words, I'm crazy busy. I do what I do because I can do it. And I don't need anyone's help to come alongside of me. Thank you very much. In fact, Moses warns the people of God about what happens when they get to the promised land. He knew what would take place in Deuteronomy 8, verse 11. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, when your herds and your flocks grow large and your silver and gold increase and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And you may say to yourself, listen to this, my power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me. These are the words of the Bible. Now, let me give you a corollary. These are the words from the Star Tribune, from a guest editor a few years ago. And I read these words and I thought, oh my, listen. There are some who naively cling to the nostalgic memory of God. The average churchgoer takes a few hours out of the week to experience the sacred, but the rest of the time he is immersed in a society that no longer acknowledges God as an omniscient, an omnipotent force to be loved and worshiped. Today, listen, we are too sophisticated for God. We can stand on our own. We are prepared and ready to choose and define our own existence. That's the backdrop to the world we're living in today. And it's a dangerous place to be because it elevates pride. When we believe we're self-sufficient and self-reliant, we make what we have and we make what we do about us and not about God. And that's pride. And so when God goes away from our lives, so does humility. Do we even have a rationale for humility without God? Take God out of your life, pride increases. And we define our own existence. I connect this to busyness, our theme today, and I think about it. You work to earn, you earn to eat, and you earn to get things. And yes, God made us to work, allowed us to earn, allowed us to see the fruit of our labor. But without even noticing it, we can get stuck in busy because all of a sudden we want more. So we work more to earn more, so we can eat more and have more. We're the hamster. Without even realizing how foolish our lives look, we're ready to be flown out of the hamster wheel. We define our own existence saying, look what I did, look what I got, look what I can do, so we can get more. When God is neglected, the runner-up God takes his place. Who's the runner-up God? Me, self, mankind. True or false? Are you crazy busy because you are trying to earn more, to get more? And you say, as we have heard, my power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me. That's pride. And we will succumb to a life of profound busyness. Number three, I'm not very teachable. This is a good one for us. I'm crazy busy. I do what I do because I'm stubborn. I don't listen to people. You think about it. I'm going to do what I want to do when I want to do it because I can. And it's interesting because usually in a life that's really on the brink of being out of control, busy, often our friends, our family members, we have them in our lives, they're close to us, and they encourage us to slow down. They find ways, they send you a note, they give you a call, they think there might be another way, and they offer suggestions about other ways or whether people could come alongside and help you in this time of need. They give advice to encourage a better-paced life, just like God. We talked last week about God promptings, that God prompts us concerning what he wants, those biblical rhythms. But when we're so busy, we don't hear those promptings. And sometimes when people whom we see and touch, sometimes every day, give their advice to us, we don't listen to them either. And we continue on that crazy track. Jeremiah 13:9 says, I will ruin the pride of Judah and the great pride of Jerusalem. These wicked people who refuse to listen to my words, who follow the stubbornness of their hearts. Pride just stubbornly refuses to be taught the way of God or the wisdom of other people that come alongside of us, because what is right, the standard of right, is us, me, myself, and I. And I live in that place, not God's way or anyone else's way. This is what I'm choosing to do. So true or false, I'm crazy busy because I want to do things my way and don't take time to listen to the counsel of God or others to find a better way. And I know there's some spouse going like this, because yesterday I said to you, it's a GP, God prompting. Number four, I like to take credit for what God does. I'm crazy busy. I do what I do because I want praise and I want the credit. I think this may be the most obvious kind of pride, living for praise. It feels good to have people like us and to value us and to praise us. And a vivid illustration of taking credit for what God does is Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. Listen to his words while Daniel 4, verse 30. Nebuchadnezzar said, is not this the great Babylon I have built as the royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty? Even as the words were on his lips, a voice came from heaven. This is what is decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken from you. You will be driven away from people and will live with the wild animals. You will eat grass like the ox. Until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone he wishes. Wow. There's our verse. God opposes the proud. He gives grace and favor to the humble. And so we find, as the story continues, that Nebuchadnezzar is eating grass like the oxen. Literally. Now, in our day and age, maybe that, you know, it's organic eating. We like it. It's okay. You know, let them go for it. But Nebuchadnezzar here, he didn't like the grass day after day after day. Doesn't like eating like the oxen. He wants something more. And where does something more come from? God. So he confesses. King Nebuchadnezzar confesses to God. And God restores him in Daniel 4:37. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt the and glorify the King of Heaven, because everything he does is right and all his ways are just. And those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. Have you been humbled in prideful places and God just, wow, brings you to your knees? I think a tributary of this principle is people pleasing. that people-pleasing is a cause for busyness. And sometimes we say yes to do things, even if it makes our lives crazy busy. It's for several reasons. Maybe it's the right thing to do. It's really going to help a person out. That's not related to pride. That's just, I'm going to inconvenience my life and let it get a bit over the top for a time because I feel a need to come alongside and help this person. That could be really a good motivation, not a shadowed one. But also it could be because it's the thing I do because I'm afraid that I'm going to disappoint the person if I say no. How many times do you say yes because you're fearful of disappointing somebody in your life? And it contributes to your crazy life that's connected to pride. Or you say yes to get the praise for doing it or to get credit for doing it. Because something deep within you wants to be valued and treasured and prized. Maybe you didn't get it from your dad and you didn't get it from your mom or you didn't get it from a coach or you didn't get it from your friend and that need is so great, you just say yes, 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 and your life gets crazy busy because you're looking for validation. That's connected to pride. True or false, sometimes you get crazy busy because you want praise, credit, validation. You just want to be wanted. Number five, did I tell you you had to think deeply with me? Kind of a serious message, isn't it? But it's a good message that gives us the corrective that we need. Look at number five. I have proved myself and like the accolades of my position. I'm crazy busy. I do what I do because I like to be made much of and will work and work to prove myself worthy of honor. You know, Jesus indicted spiritual leaders. I'll put an emphasis on that. Spiritual leaders. For this very quality in Jerusalem. In Matthew 23:6, they love the place of honor at banquets and the most important seats in the synagogues. They love to be greeted with respect in the marketplace and to be called rabbi by others. After the 8:30 service this morning, I had a guest come up to me and he holds a political office and he said, I needed to hear this verse. As we're going into the political season, boy, keeping your heart in check is really hard. See, they're seeking to increase the reputation of God, of themselves rather than God. But we're called to make God look good, not ourselves look good. That's the difference. And so we find that some people never find rest because we have something to prove, to work for the blessing of mom or dad. So true or false, you're busy, busy to prove your worth and to gain honor. Is that you? And then last, I struggle to trust in God. This is the big one. Pride cannot trust in God. Pride leads you to trust in yourself. Because to trust in God is to be too dependent on another. It's giving too much deference to the strength of someone other than yourself, and you need to be in control. But trusting God is the heartbeat of humility, which is the opposite of pride. Proverbs 28:25. Look at the contrast. An arrogant man stirs up strife, but he who trusts in the Lord will prosper. When it comes to busyness, the strife that gets stirred up usually is the strife within myself and the strife that I create in relationships that count the most in my closest sphere of influence. And I tip people upside down because of the choices that I make. And of course, I'm using the pronoun I, reflecting you, we. Do these things. And so we find that when it comes to busyness, the strife on the inside and with relationships is something we have to pay attention to because it creates an imagined sense of security when we think we're in control. It's just a false picture of it. But along the way, your insides get anxious and your relationships get unsettled. Some forms of anxiety, friends, find their root in pride. Many of them do. But here again, the word. God opposes the proud. Humble yourself in the presence of the Lord, and with his mighty hand, he'll lift you up in due time. Cast all your cares and anxieties on him because he cares for you. And I know a lot of you. And right now, a lot of you have so much anxiety in your life and so much worry in your life, and you're doing the best you can to deal with it, but pride keeps you from releasing it to the trust of the Lord. So before we close in prayer and before we stand and give thanks to God for his provision in our lives, Let's offer ourselves to him and trust in the Lord, as Rishi shared in his faith story. If you have never trusted Jesus Christ as the Lord of your life and the Savior of your life, I would say today, in this hour, in this moment, you would say, Lord, I am a prideful person. I've lived away from you. I want to humbly come and offer myself to you and ask for forgiveness and receive life today and for eternity. And for all of us, trusting the Lord is a daily deal, not a one-time experience. So stand, let's offer our lives to him. Thanks, Father, for goodness and grace every day and in every possible way. You have called us to trust you because there's so much good that comes in it. You give us grace, you lift us up, you care for us. And Lord, you see better than I can see or anyone else in the room can see the condition of our souls, of those gathered in this place, whose worries and cares are so high, just the thought of getting through this day or this week seems incomprehensible to them. So may these promises be fresh and new. The promise that grace and favor follow the humble. The promise that you will lift us up with your mighty right hand. The promise that in humility we have a capacity to place in your mighty right hand the anxieties, the concerns, the cares that just swallow up the joy of life. In the midst of hard circumstances and big demands on our lives, might there be the joy that comes through your presence. We give thanks that you make all things new, taking the dust and fashioning it to your image of beauty. And we offer ourselves to that end. Make us new, we ask. Friends, God makes everything new. And I want to thank you for thinking deeply with me this morning. And I know that you may have to take those six biblical perspectives of pride, put them in your journal, and continue. I'm processing this past week. But I want the promise of new. And I know you do too. So as you go, the winds of his grace will blow through your life to make you new as you walk humbly with him. So take the wisdom of God's word, live it out, and enjoy his favor. God's peace to you as you go, friends.